feeling good, Pam. But she did say that she would chat with, you know, she set up a time to meet with Mindy and Maria. But she didn't make it tonight, so we can talk some more, so.
That's good murder, Tom. Murder is a good compromise.
Yeah, because I heard from Louise that he couldn't get his name. Then though, I could call him.
I'm in the co-chair of the task force.
Oh, okay.
And this is April Allison, administrative assistant.
I don't know if she's gonna be here tonight.
Well. So, yeah, I think everybody can do some stuff.
Maria, who works with ASMSU and will be on.
Okay, Betty Sanford, supportive services.
Well, I think we should at least chat. I'm always working with what you got. And I think the issues that we wanted to sort of talk about in some discussion today had to do with two things. First of all, the charge to the task force is to take a real comprehensive view of issues for gay and lesbians across the university campus. And the task force, the co-chairs, Anita and Terry, had the foresight in their planning to ensure that we had a subcommittee that could look at multicultural issues. And we just kind of seem to be struggling along here. In the sense that it is much more difficult to identify, I think, individuals from particularly sort of ethnic minority backgrounds who are as willing to come out and talk about issues as they impact them individually. And because we haven't had as broad a cross-section of input as I think we wanted, a thought came that we needed to also look at things from the standpoint of a system reaching out from a kind of service delivery outward perspective. And so I think, Betty, for you and the Office of Supportive Services, and obviously for Fred and all of the things he does with minority programming, if, you know, we could have some dialogue and discussion about whether or not there are services for one from your units that may be particularly available to students who are gay, lesbian, bisexual, who also are from ethnic minority groups. And so, you know, what are the issues as you kind of have the pulse rate of students that you might be able to share with us based on your own interactions with students who might fall in those categories of things the university needs to be sensitive to?
Well, I think one of the first things is kind of what we're doing here is recognizing the lack of sensitivity and openness and any attempt to try to address whatever issues they are. I know as coordinator of the super program, this summer we had a young man among our population of 82 students who was homosexual.
Hey, what's the super program?
Supportive services is really made up of a lot of different services that support students. And the super program is just one of those, and that's a summer university program, encourage and retention. And that's a program where we bring in roughly 80 to 90 students into the summer, into the university during the summer, at a time when enrollment is lower. We choose our own classes, faculty, give a lot of support around those classes, mandatory tutorial and other things that we don't provide, or we don't provide with the same structure during the regular school year.
And will those students go in fall term?
Yes. Mm-hmm. And that when they come in during the summer, this is their first term. It's a regular university term, and they get credit for their courses. It's just in a different structured setting. So that's super. And this summer, I know we had one young man who identified himself as homosexual, and he did the but as far as our office really addressing that issue, having very much discussion about ourselves and looking at different things that we can do, I don't think we really reached that point. I noticed in the meeting this morning that we were all in, the all UUD meeting, one other thing that Judy Gentile does is that every time there's something that's an oversight or whatever, she's creating that sensitivity to the group, you know. So I think this is a good forum for addressing some of those issues and then trying to establish an avenue for dealing with those issues. Maybe our staff should have a special channel or support mechanism that these students could automatically relate to. And that's certainly not something we've done in the past.
Betty, do you feel that the student at the end of the super program felt adequately supported, having shared that information with a member of the staff, that he or she received back the kind of adequate support that facilitated that process?
I don't know that I would necessarily say that it was adequate, because I think it just so happened that in the contact with this staff and developing a relationship with this staff, the person felt secure enough to talk about this. But I don't think they came in knowing that there was a support system, that they was okay, you know? So in that sense, I don't think it was adequate.
One of the things that we're trying to think of right now is sort of, obviously there are different student needs at different levels. When you're talking about, you know, a student, a high school student having, you know, realize that and come out to themselves, you know, that's unfortunately very rare. I mean, you know, we know that there are a lot of high school and teenage suicide, you know, connected with, people dealing with that and that, having a good experience dealing with that. So that's fairly rare. I was just wondering, that might have, I don't know, triggered some insight maybe to staff people. Was there any like indication of what the student was asking? What, I mean, did they just come right out and say, you know, this is my situation, and did they identify any needs that they would have? Because that's something that we're trying to do right now too.
I'm not real sure. It really was not discussed with me in depth, but mm-hmm. the person just said this person confided in me. And mm-hmm. without talking about a lot of issues mm-hmm. in that sense.
Then it would be fair to say that, you know, one of the things that
maybe many of our units might need on campus is some sensitivity, sort of, I'm thinking of, you know, the cultural awareness, sensitivity training stuff that we've been through from a counseling standpoint. Are there some sensitivity training type things that maybe we ought to hope that units will do, especially units that are going to have a lot of contact with students around this whole issue of sexual orientation?
I think so. You know, and I'm thinking about our, as more and more things are present and we're owning and identifying more needs among different groups. Our seminar that we teach, the ORO 500 Skill Building Seminar, becomes a vehicle for that, because now that diversity, you know, that's kind of a word that we're addressing, and we've incorporated that into our seminar. And we have a large lecture session, and we will have somebody come in and talk about that. So I see that as a means and as a vehicle for getting that out.
Who takes that course?
Our freshmen.
Now those are all the UUD freshmen?
No.
Oh, the UUD.
This is a special population of freshmen. And that's the Office of Supportive Services, really all of our students are CAPS, which is College Admissions Achievement Program students. And these are students who have been identified as college material. At the same time, recognize that there may be some things in their background that are not going to be the best, and therefore they want to surround them with a number of different support services mm-hmm. to enhance the opportunity of really being maintained at the university and of course graduating and doing that with mm-hmm. the least amount of frustration. So it's but also socially and personally. And our job is getting much, much harder now that we're going to the semester system and everything is geared up, you know. So that's what that's what we're all about, and that's who our students are. That's who the CAP students are.
UUD, undergraduate university division. I'm just trying to picture, make sure I got everything. Supportive services, all the pre-college programs fall under UUD, the stuff Pam does, Learning Resources Center is under UUD. And then all the academic advisors for students who are classified in the UUD structure.
Or the lower division.
Lower division. Any other big units?
Testing.
Handicap program.
Yes.
Handicap program.
And testing. And I'm trying to think of the proper name for the program. Where you have foreign TAs and all of that. I'm not remembering the exact name of the program. But that's on the UUD as well.
And you all have like regular staff meetings. I mean, regular, all of UUD meetings are regular. Sort of go around to different groups and do some sensitivity training. And you do it in the group with which individuals are.
Student affairs, essentially. We work with the students in different areas. However, some of the same students that would be in the super program, that would be CAP students, would also be the students that we would be contacting in the residence halls, that we would be providing and encouraging to participate in our cultural programming that we would be doing going forward for the year. We work directly with the advisors in terms of working with students who may academically be needing some additional support. And in terms of getting the word out, encouraging students to get with their advisor when that needs to happen. And so those kinds of activities, we have a direct link.
I remember Lonnie Allen telling me last year that one of the things that UUD has done is place academic advisors in the like the complexes, so students could stop saying that they couldn't they come out work. So
for the advisors to be and I think
think that in your work is that kind of kick is really and what we do is we need to areas that maybe we need to
where students would go with the other issues, you know, the vice president's office would be one aspect. But normally we find that much of that occurs in the residence hall, much of the harassment kind of concerns, and normally it would go through a resident director, and then within that context it would be taken, it would be handled.
So more than likely those issues might come up through the is that, I want to say Mary Haas, is that?
Mm-hmm.
We might call it Annette, the advantage of student affairs and services versus the minority program.
That's right.
Mm-hmm. One of the things I've noticed is that as the gays and lesbians become more vocal and come out of the closet, mm-hmm. that a number of them are majority students.
Mm-hmm.
And I think, you know, that kind of goes back to what you were saying about I wanted maybe to think that it's a majority issue, and at the same time we know that's not true. But I think the African American male or female, for that part, is dealing with kind of a double whammy. You know, they're a minority, and now they are lesbian and gay, and they don't divulge it easily. And I think we need to create a climate of acceptance and understanding. And there needs to be things in writing that acknowledge that we know that African Americans are gay. And
yeah, I think one of the things the task force wants to be sure doesn't happen, because we're having such a hard time tapping into those students, and they're looking invisible, and we don't want that to be equated with them not having any needs, because they may have, their needs may be even greater
right.
than majority students, and if there's any group that we really need to reach out to, it's probably that group.
I'm just curious if you want to share any of what you've been able to pick up from the students that you interviewed. Is that
in terms of needs or
yes,
in terms of the
in terms of needs?
I think that, like I said, it seems like to me not only the students that I've interviewed, but just students that I know personally that were within the racial and ethnic communities. I think that one of the things that I find is pretty consistent, like even with majority students, is sort of there's needs that a person has when they first come here, and that is that it's okay to be out, that it, you know, they would like to have safe space to do that. You know, the residence hall, we talked about that. Also, I think that many of them would have liked to early on, I don't know, seen as many leaders, you know, seen as many, you know, professors or whatever, you know, other people out in the community, other people, role models. Also, they would have liked to see things that, for example, they could go into the student services building, and we were very fortunate to have the bust that was done of Martin Luther King Jr., but I think they have a real realization we've got a long way to go before Harvey Milk gets there. If I'm not sure how many of you are familiar with him, he's not really that well known, I don't think, outside of the gay and lesbian community. So, I mean, that's a big need, sort of the early needs. And then later on, it gets to the point where people would like more acceptance in the classroom, would like there to be safe space there, would like to be able to talk about that issue as it fits into the context of maybe the discussion at hand. And you know, have that be okay, and not have somebody dismiss it as not being important, etc. Mm-hmm. And it infiltrates in a lot of ways. You know, being able to be out at work if you are a student that works here at the university, having I don't know, maybe more opportunities for socializing. I mean, one of the things that just got started this year is sort of the reception for new students, and that hasn't been done before. So you know, those kinds of things. But there seems like it gets more and more complex and as it goes on, but it seems like if those very beginning things aren't there, sort of acceptance, sort of an atmosphere where it's considered to be a positive part of you, then it does get pushed sort of in the back. And you either, it seems like for a lot of people they had to make a hard choice. Do they stay with the mainstream majority, a community which doesn't quite fit their needs, or do they try to fit in with the racial ethnic community and sort of take a chance or pick and choose very carefully who you tell and who you don't? So it's really awful to then see that, you know, a person be split apart like that so much.
When students come into the super program and there's other staff, are they introduced to people on the staff and on the faculty who might serve for liaisons with them in particular ways? Like, I'm thinking about at new faculty orientation, mm-hmm. this year was the first time they added to the sort of diversity panel, they added someone from the Gay and Lesbian Task Force, so that any new faculty members coming in, and there was someone representing the Native American students, the faculty, the African American faculty, so forth and so forth, and then here was this person who represented Gay and Lesbian faculty. And that was the first time that was ever done, and it got a really positive response.
Mm-hmm.
And I was wondering if you had any kind of orientation format for them where there was a panel of people that they were introduced to, who would maybe someone who would help them in the residence hall, someone who would help them with classes, someone who would help them with this, and if there might be a way to sort of incorporate really visible lesbian and gay, either peers or advisors or whatever, that they could, when they first got to campus, they could see.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you can tell people there's an office that'll help you, but if they don't see a live body with that and don't have a sense that that person really cares about it, what I know about students is that they're fearful. And I would think minority students would be even more fearful of the system. But I was thinking of ways in which when those high-risk kids come in anyway, and some of those high-risk kids just statistically are going to be gay and lesbian, there was a way to bring those of us from the student body and the faculty to them, just like you brought the advisors into the residence hall.
Mm-hmm.
So we could have lunch with them, or, you know, do something.
Well, the other thing that you suggest, or Anita, is a sort of a non, you don't have to self-identify. If there's a panel of people,
mm-hmm.
you know, I might intently listen to Anita or intently listen to Mary, but that's kind of like internal. And I don't have to go up to you and contact you or anything, because I kind of know who you are and where you are. And that gives me a safe way to make my own contact in my own way without necessarily coming out. I might not have come out, I might not be comfortable in the group, you know, walking up and having a conversation. But I think that that's another key piece in services is, you know, we talk about services being accessible and available, and services need to be accessible to people when they identify the need. I mean, it's sort of like when they get to the point that they're ready to deal with, they need to know who to talk to. And so we can't just kind of take something to individuals until they're ready for it. I don't know, Fred, with some of the things that happened, I was trying to think of like some of the orientations. We have all the separate orientations by ethnic group now for freshmen coming in. I can't exactly visualize with the black student reception how one might do that. You know, in the sense of just making information available. Because it is more social than it is informational.
Right.
You're more mingling around. Are there issues coming, Mary, I mean, from your standpoint, things you're hearing from the caucuses or from the minority, the black aides and the residence halls that suggest heightened awareness maybe on their part, or heightened sensitivity, or real major problems other than that?
Of all the problems and the issues that I've dealt with, that hasn't been an issue that I've dealt with thus far. That's something that has very little, well, really, far as I'm concerned, I have been really no discussion on in terms of those issues.
Mm-hmm.
I think in the black community, it's considered such a taboo that it's not even discussed, and people are afraid to even think about discussing it. And I agree, I think there are some students that we have that are buy-in, but it's that fear of coming out and making that known and being totally ostracized when you're already dealing with some issues of coming into a predominantly white institution and trying to make that adjustment from that perspective than mentioning or saying that I'm gay, lesbian, or bi, and dealing with that aspect of it too. That adds more to things that we have to deal with. So I think the fear of being ostracized is one thing. Our minority aides have an opportunity to go through different training with that particular, that they get in the residence hall in terms of being sensitive to those issues, but so they're prepared in case a student comes to them with those issues and want to discuss those things, they're ready to deal with that. But as we go through our weekly report that our minority aides turn in, we haven't had any information thus far in our report that indicates that they're into students that are willing to discuss those particular issues. So it's out there, but I think it's so hidden right now. Mm-hmm. I think it's going to be really tough to really get in there and really get that information out.
It seems like you pointed out a strength, though, or something that's already in place. The minority aides already, as a part of their training, have some sessions that deal with issues related to sexual orientation and how one might deal with that. Because I think our report should clearly report that here's something that's in place. You know, pre-task force has been going on, and then the other piece that even with that, there's not been any reported incidences. But I think that's a critical piece to put in, that's something that's already taking place. Because I think people sort of assume that, because sometimes we don't discuss it, that we don't transfer that into understanding that people need to be trained and appreciative of that.
Right.
And you know, we have diversity videos, and as far as I can remember, none of those deal with the lesbian and gay community. And you know, just listen to Murray, what Murray's saying, it seemed to me that the key thing now, and the basic issue now, is to really educate the public so that people become more comfortable with the word, with the people, with their needs, and we can begin to create a safe environment for people to disclose in. Because right now, people are not going to disclose because there's too much fear. They're ostracized and not accepted. And so I think until we help them to feel safe in the classroom and in the residence hall and with each other and that kind of thing, and I think education will help that process.
Do you think if students are, say a student is having trouble around that issue, do you think he or she's more likely to disclose to a peer than to an advisor or a faculty member, or do you think they might feel safer?
I think,
what I found with my own experience, particularly as a residential assistant in residence halls a number of years ago, we had a young African-American female who was lesbian, who actually had gone out of the confines of her, she didn't disclose it. It was interestingly enough, she did not disclose it amongst her African-American peers. She actually went to at that time there was a very active lesbian, you know, community, so she went outside to do just that. And it just so happened my involvement in theater, of course, involved also, you know, my having contacts with a number, you know, of those individuals. So that's how it actually came out to me. So, but it just so happens is that she never disclosed back. And I think Mary brings up a very good point from the standpoint that, you know, what if there is a fear in terms of isolation, you're dealing with so much anyway from the aspect of survival here and isolation, you certainly don't want to be isolated from that standpoint.
I was just thinking it might be important to think about where those students would go. If they're going to go within the community or without the community, or are they going to go above, or are they going to go on a peer level or what, to help figure out who would help them most.
Well, you know, I think there's a couple of issues. I think what Pam raises is this kind of issue of how you get sort of within the ethnic community. And I think there are aspects of reality within the African-American community that are hard-pressed to change. And some things may change, and I mean, the fact that Michigan has the highest rate of AIDS in the country and teen populations enough to kind of knock you off your feet. And then you start looking within the statistics and you see the representations that, you know, there are going to be some real questions we'll begin to ask over time related to AIDS that may, in fact, help us talk about some of our kind of homophobic issues that are very central to our kind of cultural groups. But I'm afraid for the student who doesn't connect anywhere. Mm-hmm. Here's this black student who walks in. Certainly not going to tell my friends in the caucus, because they already joked about it in the meetings. I know them, said that. Don't mention it. I certainly cannot be seen associated with a group of majority students on a real regular basis, and certainly not a group of majority students who are seen as lesbian or seen as gay, because then the discussion is out. So what do? I don't talk to anybody about it. I just sort of self-destruct internal. And maybe the only place I may talk about it is in the confines of a kind of confidential counseling setting, which, you know, I might find that in Mecca. I might find that in an advisor that I kind of develop a relationship with. So my sense is that the students will go a lot of different places. There won't be a set place they'll go to. And I guess the issue is that if you don't know where students go, can you begin to look at ways to make sure that people who are in major roles of interacting with students at least have a comfort level that they can discuss it. It can be confidential if they want it to be confidential, and the comfort level of the individual is okay. Mm-hmm. You know, so Mary and I have been meeting forever and ever, and all of a sudden it comes out that, you know, Mary's gay or I'm lesbian. Does our relationship change because of that? And I think that the fear is that people's relationships with people change. Mm-hmm. And that when you're from being an African-American female, you got enough problems already. Any more reasons why people are not being supportive of you. And it gets confusing because all that stuff gets all muddled up and you don't know what they're responding to. And so it's, I think it's reasonable for us to expect that kind of sense to retreat, so that we really need to kind of pick up on the things that Betty talked about in the sense of creating a safe environment and educating and trying to make sure at least those of us who work for the university are willing to have a conversation about it, understanding it's a part of our commitment for working here. We've got to be open and sensitive and growing as we go along, knowing that we're all at a different point on the continuum.
Well, I think that's going to be the exact, what you're saying is going to be the exact short-term answer that we're going to have for those students who might be lesbian or gay and are totally afraid to come out and say that. Is that going to be that family or staff person that they make contact with? Because I don't think students are going to be mature enough to really deal with that issue. So I think part of the training, part of the discussion should happen along that faculty staff level and help them understand the issues related to that. And then secondly, helping them understand how they can benefit a student who may come to them with those issues. So making that student at least feel comfortable that someone is here to listen to me and try to give me some support in this particular area of interest. So that's why I really see it coming from. I don't think students are really ready to deal with that. Especially I know in our community, I know they're not ready to deal with it.
Right. I think that piece is just so important too, because I think that we're talking about, you know, say, you know, an Asian woman coming to this university, she may make the connection, you know, like you said, at that level. And, you know, she may be able, I mean, if that staff person is able to develop a relationship, you know, a working relationship there, and be supportive, that allows her to go even beyond that and maybe join the student group with some confidence behind her, with some consciousness about her value, and say, yes, I'm an Asian American lesbian, and you know, you should be programming for me too, you know, which is totally valid and should, you know, should always be considered. But just giving the students a voice to go past, I need to go out, and because certainly, you know, when we had the program, and we did the program on Audre Lorde, who's an African American lesbian, you know, there was a lot of people who didn't know that she was a lesbian until they came there and to the program, and really appreciated hearing some things that they not only recognized as African American values coming from this woman's writings, but also very distinct parts of her identity as being a lesbian. They were very appreciative of being able to hear that. But clearly, if we don't have people who are conscious about all the parts of themselves, we're not going to see that, those sorts of programs that I think are really telling about all the different experiences that we have as people. I mean, I don't know right now, but I do know that the students mostly do, a lot of the choosing of their own programming, things like that. But I think that certainly staff, and they have a role in that, advising the program, maybe giving some options, or, being aware of maybe some resources in terms of...
I'd like to go back to something that Murray brought up about faculty needing to be aware.
Mm-hmm.
I have about 1,000 students a year go through my classroom, and I do a section on AIDS, mm-hmm. I do a section on gay and lesbian studies, and I do a lot with racism, sexism in the classes. So at the end of the class, people who are having trouble with any of those topics may come to see me. So I get an African American woman whose brother's just died of AIDS. She wasn't able to be with him. The boy died alone because his mother had disowned him because he was gay. The only way that I could really deal with that situation well, and I was her only contact, was to send her for lunch with somebody that I knew from your community who would be sympathetic,
mm-hmm.
and that happened to be Renee Kennedy. And that was the most effective thing I could do because I knew nobody on campus. Maybe one thing you might like to suggest, that I could suggest to you, is that you have a list of contact people that I could deal with here for that. She didn't feel comfortable going to the counseling offices.
I think that's a good idea, but that's going to be difficult getting faculty and staff to disclose that information. See, one thing about, I'd just like to say overall, in terms of the African American, Black American, as I want to call it, community, that we are not a self-disclosing people. And we have a very difficult time really self-disclosing, and it takes a lot to really get information out of us. So that's what makes it difficult, and that's why I'm frustrated day in and day out with students, because you talk to them and you know something is going on, and you're trying to get it out of them, and it's hard to get out of them. And they don't present that aspect until they're at the bottom, and they really need some help and don't have anywhere else to go. So it's very difficult, and I think I try to come up with some strategy on how we can to get maybe faculty, staff, people that maybe by gay or lesbian that are willing to say, well, put me on this list if there are students that really need to talk to someone.
Well, you know, maybe
a big access point.
Maybe we really have to begin with the faculty, staff being just
sensitized. Again, with the total community.
Right. Exactly. And not just look for those people
exactly.
who
yeah.
identify sexually, but people who would be supportive.
Mm-hmm.
Because you're right.
They have some of the same issues that the students have.
Sure.
And coming out.
Sure.
You know, one way to look at this is to think that it's a kind of a first step for students from the ethnic backgrounds. I mean, I think a person needs to first be sensitized to cultural differences.
Right.
I mean, I think we all agree that most of us, our first level of identification is our ethnic identity. And so if I go and talk to someone who's not responsive to me as an African American female, you surely know I might be talking about anything else. And I think we have a long way to go, but just that on our campus in Michigan State, that as people develop comfort levels, we know in counseling people tend to disclose more over time, and they test you. You know, they give you a little bit to see what you do with it, and give you a little bit more the next week, and eventually when that level of trust is there, that's when you get more candid disclosure and conversation. And I think from my experiences in interacting with students and being an American faculty member, there's still so much baggage on this campus for those interactions that maybe you can't get to the sub-level. You won't get there because everybody's got all the other stuff that we're trying to deal with. So maybe one of the premises is that because of the multicultural nature of our campus, is that Michigan State still has lots to do and needs to continue to support efforts that make this a safer place for individuals from various ethnic backgrounds. And then that's the first step to get, you know, to the long range goal of being able to provide services or better services to students and faculty and staff who are also lesbian and gay. Because I think for those individuals who come out, who are willing to identify, they get into the mainstream of at least the very small lesbian and gay community of Michigan State, they will have inroads to some things because they've been willing to be comfortable enough to self-identify. But the majority of individuals from ethnic groups are not going to self-disclose to that level, then the way to at least provide the initial level of service is to be sensitive to the cultural differences. And a part of things about learning about culture is knowing the things that Mary talked about. That, you know, the African American community tends to be a very private, not self-disclosing, is not a part of our upbringing. We don't, you know, learn to go out and call names. We also have our own blanketed ways of kind of embracing difference. And I always think about my church experience growing up in the South. I mean, there were clearly, no question, there were gay men in our church. You could call them by name, and they were never referred to as homosexual, gay. Men lived together. They did. I mean, it was. They were just different. We didn't label them. They were a part of the church. You kind of knew them. And you know, that was Mr. Jones and Mr. Smith. And yeah, they had this house together on 15th Street, and they were really nice people to go trick or treat with. And you kind of knew them, but you knew them as members of the community. And as a child growing up, they were different, but you didn't call them anything. I mean, so then you go to college and you come back educated and have titles. But before that, I mean, they were just a part of the community. But I think that that's very much, at least from my experience of growing up in a very intact Black community, we were very embracing of difference as long as we didn't have to talk about it and call it.
Absolutely.
I mean, there are two women who taught in my elementary school who I now know to be lesbian, and had a conversation with them 2 years ago about this. Finally braved up and said, "Since I know you guys have been living together all these years, I mean, noticed all this stuff, right? Never once would they have been called lesbian." And wonderful teachers, you know, they were just lived around the corner from the school, real active in the community, real active in the church, just great mentors, you know, really pushing women to get educations. Family never uncomfortable with you going over and visiting and having lunch and doing, you know, some of the things that you hear people talking about when they talk about their kids and being in association with individuals who have a, you know, same-sex orientation. But somehow it was embraced and it wasn't a problem. But it wasn't that we didn't, that these segments of the community didn't recognize that individuals had a different orientation. But we didn't have to talk about it.
Mm-hmm.
We didn't have to call it anything, and so it just kind of was okay.
I think you mentioned a very important point. Couple of years ago, as a graduate student in the residence hall, we had a young man who was very active in our caucus, and until that was actually brought out, we attempted to do a session on sexual differences, and that's when a lot of the issues started to come out. But they accepted him as long as we didn't talk about it. Absolutely. And there is an unstated acceptance. He was part of the community. We were total family at that point in time. You know, it was, we protected, you know, each other. And maybe that was unusual, you know, from that standpoint. And of course, we had our infighting, but sometimes we didn't talk about it. We attempted to sensitize people to it, that people started to say, wait a minute, hey, back off. I think there are a couple of things, though, to look at that from a couple of standpoints. When you tend to do that, you tend to make people extremely insecure. They're not secure within themselves. I did with pre-college students, and we had an experience a couple of years ago where we had a young man who came in and somehow engaged the students and talked about, you know, differences in sexuality. And certainly, there were a number of our students, and we have to be very careful because we're not a program designed to basically deal with that, and that is something that they've kind of taken us out of. It's very hard not to, because that's all a part of me dealing with a person from a holistic approach. And it was very different, and I'm very glad that we had him, you know, as a part of the program at that particular time, because I think it's that it gave us an opportunity to see how students, and in fact, we thought that students were going to initially reject, and in fact, what in fact happened was that they accepted. They said, I don't care who he is, he's one of the best teachers we've got. And, you know, of course, this is that, you know, that turned out to be a very positive experience. And there were a number of students within, you know, the group that we have dealt with, are dealing with issues that did not have an opportunity to deal with it on another level outside, so they were able to kind of, that was their contact person, to talk about those issues with them. So,
as long as you stay general, mm-hmm. and you don't get specific, uh-huh. then you don't give people that space for mm-hmm. becoming defensive,
absolutely.
Feeling insecure, feeling you pointing a finger, mm-hmm. and that really reminded me of just racism.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Now, most people would say, oh yes, there's racism out there.
Yes.
But you start getting talking about specific events, and they will get very defensive. And I see that over and over and over again, because then you're bringing it home. They're feeling an identity with it. It's a closeness that they don't want. So that kind of reminds me of that. You know, it's out there, you see it, you accept it, I'm okay. But if you start talking about it, then I gotta back away. And that's a different level.
You know, I taught a course last quarter. It was a senior level course, and it was called, Ethnic Women's Autobiography. And the reason I taught it was because I thought, who has the least voice in the mainstream culture? And it's women who come from minority groups. And so I chose books like Zami, Audre Lorde's book, because she was a black lesbian, and I thought, who's more, black women are invisible enough anyway, but then there's the lesbian in that group who's even more invisible. And so I did Maxine Hong Kingston, and I tried to do Leslie Silko, so we had Made in America, and I tried to do all those voices, and I had what I thought was a really exciting syllabus, and I got to class the first day, and the class had a 20-person limit, and there were 20 people, one male, 19 women, and out of that entire class, there was no ethnic representation, there were no minority women. And I thought, there's something operating here, and I thought maybe it's because the class is being taught by a white middle class woman, and maybe the perception is that I don't have the expertise or the experience to talk about those issues. As I listened to you all talk, it seems to me maybe part of that, and I particularly wanted the lesbian experience talked about, and I wanted women who might be members of those groups to see in print someone else talking about her life, and to be able to have it discussed in a classroom, not that they would ever have to identify who they were, but to see that there were well-respected and wonderful people out there who identified like that. And I got women, Western sort of women, who came from what they considered to be, well, they didn't consider minority backgrounds, but Polish and Jewish and a lot of religious diversity and stuff like that. But I didn't get the very visible. I didn't get any Asian American women, I got no African American women. And I wonder now if it's that privacy issue, and of course an autobiography might have been threatening to those, to that particular women. Because I think that a class like that, where you're reading those kind of books, would be really important if students could see those as not not threatening are not classes in which they have to disclose, or if they were having a sexual orientation struggle, they knew they could go to a class where there'd be a novel taught in which James Baldwin was talking, or, you know, Audre Lorde was talking, or Edwin Rich was talking, or something like that. And I don't know if there's, I don't know how to get the word out that there are people doing that, or that, you know, there, I mean, we're not, I mean, like I think about Jim, who, and we're not, certainly not members of the minority community, but if we could bring books to those people about their own lives in some way that they would know that, and it would be non-threatening, you know, or non...
Well, I don't know. I've heard a lot of people talk about the class in Missouri, you know, that might be teaching. Yeah. I mean, I've heard a lot of awareness just by that, I think. Just the fact that it is a course.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, the fact that it is a course means that there's maybe something important to say about it.
Maybe we're just to get around, you know?
Right.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, it would be interesting to see, I don't know what kind of money the universe is going to put into anything, but, I mean, it seems that some kind of, the issue about the video was one, this kind of diversity video, looking at gay and lesbian issues, and I would think one from a multicultural standpoint might be very interesting, to as a kind of a subset of that. The other thing I was thinking about was, maybe we ought to try to identify some lecturer types, you know, some individuals who are really very scholarly in their areas, who we know are also gay and lesbian, who are willing to talk about in sort of ethnic specific ways, you know, like if black faculty might agree that if you could get support for someone to come in to make, you know, make a presentation to talk about it from that perspective, that probably would carry a lot more than anything a university could do sort of university-wide. And so that maybe, you know, one of the things is to try to identify some kind of strands or some individuals who are knowledgeable, who groups can target to bring in and then have some encouragement and support for that to happen. Because that could be helpful even with the issues we talk about related to people in counseling. Like I can think of Mecca as a place that might be a great place to target somebody. The whole minority AIDS program may be a place to target, plus any minority students who are also resident directors, assistant resident directors, GAs, and not limited just to minority AIDS, which is just a subset. But that might be the beginning of the sensitivity and awareness that at this point is the very best we can do, because we're just beginning to scrape off the tip of the iceberg. Certainly more than what we would have had, I think, on our campus.
Well, I think certainly one of the recommendations that the multicultural group could put forth to the task force was to have a series of lecturers come to campus. And, I mean, but with specific names of people who would be available, and the task force could try to say within the next 5 years we're going to have 10 of these people. Or something like that. And I mean, that would be very concrete.
Mm-hmm.
And if they could be tied in with specific programs, like Super would like to sponsor, not sponsor, saying that you all would have to pay for it, but would like to host, you know, this particular person who speaks on adolescence, or, you know, something like that.
You know, another forum for that would be the Diversity Conference.
Mm-hmm.
Now, as far as I know, they haven't really focused on gay and lesbian.
This year.
This year
there was a speaker.
Okay.
I haven't
been to meet them so long. Because we really need to begin to include them in things like that. That's very non-threatening. And produce the role models.
Thanks, ma'am.
Thank you. Excuse me. Being a single mother isn't always easy. I
thought you were in bed.
Myself.
She had to go get her baby. Okay. Every 15 minutes they charge.
Well, I think there's that actual physical person who shows up in the body and the flesh, you know, and that's real in a way that courses aren't and things like that. I mean, I really believe that.
We appreciate appreciate you taking the time to come out and share. We know it's hard when you've been going all day to take an extra hour and a half to sit on this infamous campus. But we really wanted to try to get some information from some other individuals. We sort of have Fred with us on the But if you think of other things that come up, you know, to mind, and as you talk to people in your units, and would you jot them down to me or Maria? Just kind of, you can send them anonymously. It's not, we don't need to know where your information came from as much as have a lot of ideas. If you happen to know of any students, faculty, staff who might want to be interviewed, who happen to be a member of an ethnic minority group,
that we haven't already tried to
strong arm interview. If you let, you know, Jim or Maria know, that would be really
good. The name Maria mentioned it, they're going to duck.
Maria kind of pushes. She kind of knows. They don't know too much. Because I do think it's a real issue for us here at MSU. We have all these invisible groups.
That's certainly
it's kind of funny to think of a minority person being invisible, because we aren't. I mean, we walk in and they know what we look like, but there are aspects of who we are that is very invisible. Mm-hmm. And that's the only protection we've got for our psyche, is that we've got that invisible cloak.
It's certainly dangerous for your students not to have any faculty, staff, identity out there, because they don't know where to go most often.
I mean, there's such a small number of faculty right now that are racial ethnic minorities that, you know, it's sort of, I mean, it's always been disturbing to me that there aren't many women's studies where it seems to be where the majority lesbians tend to, you know, because they know that they're going to hear women identified material, you know, and so they tend to meet each other sort of there a lot of times. But not having enough African American or Asian women, etc. If you don't have them, then the chances of having lesbians of those racial ethnic identities are even less of a chance. So it's really unfortunate.
Well, thank you.
I'm going to talk to Rosalie and probably we'll see if I can get a very large meeting.
Don't we just have a response?
Yeah.
I ran across
the street.
Oh,
did you?
Mm-hmm.
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 Mm-hmm.